from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Is it possible? Will Britain exit the European Union? This week on Register Radio, Jeanette DeMello and Rome correspondent Edward Penton look at the decision voters in the United Kingdom will be facing on June 23rd. And then Jeanette and Joan Frawley Desmond talk about the new film Me Before You and its controversial ending. Welcome again to Register Radio, a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the Register. Thanks for joining us. Our first guest, Edward Penton, is the Rome correspondent for the National Catholic Register. He talks with Jeanette about the possibility of Great Britain actually leaving the European Union.
Edward, it's great to have you back on Register Radio.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, you know, in just a few weeks, June 23rd, the United Kingdom will vote on whether or not to remain in or exit the European Union. This is a historic moment, so they've been saying. But why is this vote happening now?
Well, there's been a steady growth of kind of European skepticism in Europe, in Britain, and I think there's been a lot of rancor and division, certainly within the ruling Conservative Party, over this issue. And so I think the British Prime Minister, David Cameron, who is a Conservative, wants to kind of put this to bed one way or another. And so he wants to hold a referendum. Obviously, he hopes he's pro-European. He wants to stay in the European Union. And I think he hopes that by doing so, it'll silence his critics on this issue, and so he can go forward. But I think it's also a call from a large group of the population who do want a referendum on the European Union, because Britain was brought into the European Union in 1973 without a referendum. It was brought in by Prime Minister Edward Heath, so there was never any sort of consulting the people whether they wanted to join, although there was 2 years later there was a referendum. But so they just feel there's a need now for some voice for the people to make their views known and see if they really want to be in or out.
So in 1975, so that's over 40 years ago, the people did have a chance to vote, but it's been that long since they've had any voice in this.
Yes, and lots changed, they would argue, since then. They feel it's become less accountable, it's become less democratic, it's not in tune with the vision of the founding fathers of the European Union, who were two very devout Catholics, Robert Schuman and de Gasperi, who was Italian. They had a very sort of Catholic vision for the European Union, which they feel has, well, certainly some in the church feel has departed from that.
Sure.
So they feel there's a great need now for a sort of reevaluation of it.
And from the polls, it seems like it is neck to neck. Those who want to exit, which people have been calling Brexit, and then those who want to remain. Is it still seeming that it's going to come down to the wire?
I think it will, yes. It does seem to be that way, although the ones who generally held the majority, if only slightly, have been those who want to stay in.
Okay.
So I think it's most likely, I would say, at this stage, that most of the British people would ask to remain in. But that will cause problems possibly going forward, because there'll still be many people who won't be happy with staying in the European Union.
Right. It's a divided nation. So, Edward, let's talk a little bit about the key reasons that many want to exit the European Union.
Yes. Well, as I was saying earlier, it basically comes down to a lack of accountability. It's, I think from an American perspective, it would be like devolving some of the powers of legal powers, legislative powers, to something like the United Nations, and so people don't like that. They want to keep sovereignty, keep independence, and keep control of the way the country is run, rather than handing it over to Brussels and to the European Union to make laws and to govern the country. Some argue that 70% of the country's laws are now made in Brussels. I'm not sure if that's true, but certainly a large number are, and that was never obviously considered. That was never really wanted by a lot of the people. If they'd known that, they argue that they wouldn't have wanted to come in. But those supporting remaining also have strong cases to be made, and they feel that it's given a lot of stability, and it's good to be part of a big economic single market. And it's better for the economics of the country and better for the politics as well, they argue.
This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to our Rome correspondent, Edward Penton, and we're talking about whether Britain will actually stay in the European Union. And the vote is coming up on June 23rd. Now, Edward, it seems, I mean, at least from American perspective, we hear a lot about the crisis of immigration in Europe. This seems to be a major concern across Europe. Is this a major concern that has maybe stimulated this conversation on exiting the EU?
Yes, that's a major part of it. Those who are concerned about sort of unchecked immigration, uncontrolled immigration, they argue that the European Union fosters that because it's an open door, open border policy. Everyone within the European Union can move to different countries and work in different countries without visas. Some in the European Union can just cross each other's borders without showing a passport. That's not mm-hmm. actually what the UK belongs to. But the European as a whole has a very sort of laissez-faire border policy, and they want those who are opposed to the European Union in Britain want that to be more, for Britain to sort of reclaim that control, because they feel it's been unchecked and there's been too many immigrants, they feel, coming into the country. Sure. And some of them aren't vetted enough. And so that's a big concern. The church, on the other hand, though, has been quite strong in making sure that, you know, those who are strangers, those who are migrants, aren't just turned away when they're in need. And they call for a generous response.
That's a really good point. On the whole, what has the church said about the referendum?
Yes, well, they've been very cautious about it. Officially, as a group, as a collective group, bishops of England and Wales haven't really come down on either side. They've issued a very neutral statement, but they've called for civil discourse and to consider carefully the positions of both sides. They've also called for prayer, of course, which is very important, that the right decision is made. But they haven't, the Scottish bishops and the bishops of England and Wales haven't definitively come down on either side, because I think they feel, well, they don't know either, and I think they're divided as well within themselves. I think that the bishops, some bishops want out, some want to stay in, mm-hmm. and I think they just want to entrust it to the Lord that he will guide the country in the right way and ask the people to pray for that.
You know, Edward, have there been any other countries who have been in the EU as long as Britain has, the United Kingdom has, that have left?
No, none have left. As far as I know, none have left. It's only grown over the years. It started with just Germany and France, and then it steadily grew, and now it has 28 countries. And one of the arguments against the European Union now is that it's too big and too unwieldy to keep going. It's just too much of a bureaucracy, and you can't get 28 nations agreeing on anything, really. And so the feeling is that it's become a sort of rather sclerotic, large bureaucratic monolith, which needs to be either immensely reformed or just fragmented. I mean, I think one of the concerns is that it's become this sort of bureaucratic, corrupt organization. There's been a lot of waste involved. Some argue that it's a very small amount that's wasted, but there is a sense that that some sort of changes need to be made. And it's not really accountable, as I said earlier, to people. A lot of people don't know who runs the EU. They don't know the people involved. They don't know that they have a member of the European Parliament representing them. So there are lots of things that I think people feel could be done to make it a better organization if the UK and other countries are to stay in it.
Yes, and in your article on this topic, which our listeners can find at ncregister.com, you mentioned some others outside of United Kingdom. You talked to others who feel that it would be a bad thing for the European Union and for Britain because if they exit. What are their arguments? How would it affect the EU as a whole?
Well, Britain is a big economic contributor to the EU, and they feel that if they leave, it'll significantly weaken it. It'll make it less of a power in the world, and obviously they'll lose all the contributions that Britain makes in terms of financial contributions, which it makes. So there is that. They also feel that it weakens perhaps the stability and peace in Europe. They feel that the European Union is a great force for stability and peace. Some argue that it's kept the peace since the Second World War. Others argue that it hasn't, that that's really due to NATO and the nuclear deterrent. But either way, there is a feeling that perhaps it won't be good for Britain either, if it leaves, because it'll weaken its economy. It'll never have the access to the single market that it used to have in Europe. And they fear that it will be detrimental to Europe to Britain in the short and possibly long term as well. So there are strong arguments on both sides, and that's why I think a lot of people really don't know which way to turn and are rather confused by the issues.
So I know that President Barack Obama here in the U.S. has spoken about this issue. He seemed to really dissuade the British people from exiting the EU. Some say that was a strange intervention in another country's politics. But why would this affect the United States?
Yes. I think the United States wants to deal with Europe as a bloc. It doesn't want to deal with it as individual nations. And it's easier for the U.S. to deal with the European Union like that. And I think there's always been the talk of the special relationship, of course, between the U.S. and Britain. But that's faded somewhat, I think, over the years. And now I think because of the size of the European Union and the relative small size of Britain now, I think America would just prefer to deal with Britain with European Union as a whole.
Sure.
But his comments didn't go down too well with a large group of British people because they argue that America would never consider having such a structure and an organization ruling over itself
themselves.
As
That's
the European
true.
Union does over Britain. So there was a bit of concern about that intervention, I think.
Well, Edward, it's so good to talk to you, who is a citizen of the United Kingdom, about this important topic. We'll certainly be praying for your country and that a wise decision is made. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Jeanette. Thank you.
When we return, have you heard about this new movie, Me Before You? It's not the feel-good movie you might think it is. And we'll talk about that next. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
In today's world, we have all kinds of misinformation and even disinformation about Christianity, Catholicism, and religion in general. And we need a source that is going to give us direct quotations and authentic news about what is going on in the church, so we know what the Pope really said and not what the media said he said. We need to know what the Synod is doing, what the encyclicals mean, in order to be able to give the facts of our faith. For that reason, we need the National Catholic Register, which will give us the good news along with the hard news of our world today. And in that way, we can have what we need to go out to our world and give them the good news of Jesus Christ.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues.
Hi, this is Teresa Tomeo, host of Catholic Connection, and we're glad you're listening to the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DeMello, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Joan Frawley Desmond, is the Register's senior editor. Joan is an award-winning journalist, widely published in Catholic, ecumenical, and secular media. Joan is a graduate of the Pontifical John Paul II Institute for the Studies of Marriage and Family. She talks with Jeanette this week about the new movie, Me Before You.
Joan, it's so good to have you back on Register Radio. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, happy to be here, Jeanette.
Okay, so we're talking today about a movie that came out in the first weekend of June. It did much better than analysts expected. It surpassed their predictions. It did quite well. And of course, the movie is Me Before You. And this is based on a book that was first released in 2012 by Jojo Moyes. And this is something that has captured the interest of people, mostly romantic, those who enjoy the romantic read. USA Today had written that this book has been number one for the last month on their list. And so this is getting a lot of attention, and I think it's really worth us talking about. But unfortunately, as we talk about this movie, we have to talk about the controversy surrounding the ending of the movie. There's just no way not to spoil this for people, to spoil the ending of the movie. And so I apologize right away to our listeners that listening to our conversation is going to spoil the ending of the movie. So be aware. And Joan, let's talk first of all about the premise of this film, Me Before You.
Well, in some ways, Jeanette, it follows the normal kind of tearjerker formula you have of something very sad that's happened. A young man is a quadriplegic. He led a previously vital life, and he was a successful financier. And 2 years previous to the start of the film, he had an accident and has been a quadriplegic since then. A young woman who's a big directionalist coming from a working class family is hired to be his paid companion, which in itself is a sad thing and something I've heard of before, where disabled people sometimes are isolated. In this case, what she doesn't realize is that she's being partly hired to help him regain a will to live. Mm-hmm. He has a secret plan, and again, a spoiler alert for those who want to see Me Before You. His secret plan is that he is planning to go to Switzerland and participate in assisted suicide with lethal injection or lethal medication. And his parents are clearly divided on this. And the mother is kind of holding out hope that this young woman might help stir him back to life, stir him in a desire to kind of embrace life and find a new chapter for his life. So that's the premise of this. It's very unlikely romantic pairing. This young woman is kind of goofy, funny, quirky sense of humor, dresses in strange outfits, and quite endearing, just a bundle of sort of love and emotions, a very kind person. And so when she ultimately finds out that he has this plan to end his life, she is shocked but also energized to try her best to change his mind. Mm-hmm. She has, as most such films have, there's sort of a deadline that's been imposed, a six-month period, where she wants to try to help him think of reasons and to want to stay alive. And in the process, they fall in love.
Right. Now, Joan, reading your story on this movie, I wasn't able to see it yet before we're having this conversation. So I'm reading your story. I've read a lot of reviews about it, and I'm just, wanting to understand the appeal of the movie, but also the controversy that has been around the movie. And one of the things, so your story is titled Me Before You, A Cinderella Story for the Age of Assisted Suicide. And in your story, you talk about where you actually saw the film, and the location, the community in which you saw the film is a community that has been rocked by suicide. And of course, in California, assisted suicide is becoming legal. How did this influence your way of watching this movie and of understanding it?
Well, Jeanette, I really found it disturbing. And, of course, I'm one of the older people in the audience. Most of the people there, it was a late afternoon show. You're going to get young people who've just gotten out of high school. That was the kind of group that was there. It was pretty full. The theater was full.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what's happened in the community? Well, there's been a spate of suicides by high school students who have thrown themselves down on the train tracks in Palo Alto. Mm-hmm. public school system, which is right next to Stanford. It's a place of high expectations. Nobody knows for sure all the reasons that these young people committed suicide while they were in high school, but the general sense is that they were overwhelmed by pressures. There may have also been unidentified issues with depression that families or healthcare workers didn't pick up on. So you have that context. At the same time, you also have, so you have people saying this is a tragedy. These young people would commit suicide. Don't they know that we love them? Don't they know their solutions to their problems? And then you have the state on June 9th coming up in a day or two, saying that assisted suicide is legal. And if it's legal, ostensibly, it's a good thing for people to consider. And who are the people that consider it? Well, in the push to legalize suicide, there were all kinds of stories suggesting people who might face pain from chronic conditions, the terminal conditions. And so disability rights activists got very involved, too, and said, well, we're worried about where we stand after assisted suicide is passed, or where the elderly or the poor stand. Their concern is to make sure that they have health care services, not access to lethal medication. So that's the kind of context I brought to it when I was watching this film. But of course, a lot of the teenagers, they were just in the moment watching the film. And as a result, perhaps not being aware of the kind of messages they may be receiving.
This is Jeanette DeMello on Register Radio. I'm speaking to Joan Frawley Desmond, who writes at the Register and is one of our senior contributors. And Joan and I are talking about this film, Me Before You, and the controversy that's surrounding it. Now, Joan, this film, as you said, people could, you see the trailer, you see the pictures of the film. It's a beautiful couple. It's something that, it's a date night movie or a movie for the young and interested in romance. and so it could be very deceiving. And I felt like that was one of the reasons why we really needed to talk about this, to make people aware of the controversy that surrounds this and the dark nature of suicide, of assisted suicide. And that's precisely why we're having this conversation. Disabled groups have protested this movie, and I think that it's important to recognize their voice in criticizing this movie. What have you read?
Yeah, disability groups are really concerned. They feel like this the young man, the lead character, they like the idea of a lead character who's disabled being presented in a film, but he's not presented in a multi-dimensional way. Mm-hmm. Essentially, even his life before his accident is presented in a very one-dimensional way. He's kind of, a larger-than-life character. He's rich. He's successful. He has an attractive girlfriend. He's going places. That's the sum total of who he is. We don't know his secret thoughts. We don't know his dreams and aspirations and in a sense of serving others, his character. So we just see this very one-dimensional character who now has had his life turned upside down and is, in fact, still a one-dimensional character now, a disabled man in a wheelchair who refuses to accept his fate.
I saw this wonderful post, I think it was at Alatea, written by an 11-year-old girl who is in a chair and who does extreme sports. I think she's a skater. And she just wrote about how despicable this film was. So it really is worth checking out how the disabled community and those who are really promoting the beauty of life have reacted to this film. But Joan, you brought out in your article another aspect of this film, and that is how Hollywood has influenced our culture. We have just about 2 minutes left to the show, but I think it's an important point. What has Hollywood done in influencing our culture to accept certain things as norms?
Yeah, well, I think Hollywood often anticipates where we're going as a culture and where even our political system is going. Hollywood is often ahead. We've had films in the past about other controversial issues like abortion, same-sex marriage, and I'm not trying to equate all of these the same. They're all hot-button issues. Now we have the issue of assisted suicide, and the one that a lot of people bring to mind is Million Dollar Baby, which won four or five Oscars, Best Picture, Best Actor, you know. And it depicted a Catholic boxing coach, Clint Eastwood, who, after his special charge, this young woman who becomes a hugely successful female boxer is disabled. And then she, again, spoiler alert, she doesn't want to live anymore. And after she tries herself, he grudgingly, but kind of decides to help her. So that story came out, it's almost 10 years ago now. And so we have this, and now we've got assisted suicide in 5 or 6 states, maybe more. It's happening every day. There's a push to change this. I also want to raise another issue very quickly, Jeanette. So
sure.
You know, I was thinking about it. I'm in the darkened theater. I'm thinking, what are these teenagers thinking? Just normal, ordinary teenagers. Then I also learned that a family friend who has a mildly disabled granddaughter, but one who faces more serious challenges ahead, unbeknownst to her, she thought it would be a fun outing for them to go see this film. And she's there with her mildly disabled granddaughter watching a film mm-hmm. about a disabled man who isn't facing imminent death, who just decides he doesn't want to live anymore. And she was just shocked and dismayed that her granddaughter, you know, was getting this message.
Right. It's a very sad message. It's a message that you don't have a future. And I think that's absolutely the wrong message to send any teenager, any child, any young person, but anyone who is facing a challenge or a suffering. So it's a serious thing for us to look at a film like this in a more Christian context, in a more life-giving context. Joan, thanks for being with us today.
Always a pleasure, Jeanette.
Don't forget, you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com or ewtnradio.net. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Jeanette, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.